This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, joined as always by Adam Kirchin. And Adam, we wanted to start today with a little bit of news. Obviously, Steven Gostkowski going on injured reserve today. We're recording this on Wednesday when they made the move to put Ghost on IR with a hip injury that he will have surgery to repair. It sounds like he's aiming to come back in 2020, but he will be gone for the rest of the year. This is not a situation where he is going to come back off of IR in 8 weeks or anything like that. He is done. So the Patriots did bring in a bunch of kickers today for a tryout, but I think that where we're going to come from this is just how much do we think that they're going to miss Gostkowski and his early season struggles? Is this, wouldn't call it addition by subtraction, but I'm sure that take is out there somewhere, Adam.
I'm sure it is, but I think what we're going to find out is what it's like for the rest of the league.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so, we'll see. I think it's like when the backup quarterback comes in, you know, everybody's like, all right, he's going to lead us to the promised land. But
yeah. Matt Barkley.
Matt Barkley looked better, I thought. I kind of just feel like, I don't know what to expect. And right. I think that for all Gostkowski's struggles, I'm not certain. I have no idea if any of these guys can be at his level. So I don't think you can really trust their abilities as of right now. It's, getting used to a new team, everything. I would temper expectations. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I think that's a great point in that we're going to learn now. A lot of people throughout the first month of the season, not to lump everybody together, but there was a lot of people out there that were saying, we can't find anybody better than Gostkowski. This is a disaster. He's missed 9 kicks in 4 games, 4 extra points and 5 field goals. Obviously, it hasn't been pretty. Right now, his kicking percentage, which accumulates both kicks and extra points, which nowadays the extra points aren't a given, so it's important to do that. He ranks 30th out of 33 kickers in kick percentage, 78% right now of the time between kicks and extra points. So that's obviously not good. He's near the bottom of the league in that statistic. But that being said, I think the trust factor is a huge part of this, and the fact that the Patriots year in and year out have shown a ton of trust in Gostkowski and the fact that they haven't brought in competition, that it shows that they really believe in him. Because if you look at other positions, they bring in competition for people all the time. Now, the easy one with Ghost is to go back to Ryan Allen and Jake Bailey, right? They draft a punter to push a guy that had a great season last year in Ryan Allen, and he actually ends up taking Ryan Allen's job. But I think what that does show is that Bill Belichick has maybe more confidence in Ghost than just about any other player on the team not named Tom Brady. What other player on this team has not, even Brady, they brought in Jimmy, they brought in Jacoby Brissett, they drafted Jared Stidham. They've brought in competition, or, at least competition for the long term for Brady, and they've never done that with Ghost. That really tells you something. And I couldn't agree more with what you said about now we're going to find out, right? Everybody thinks the grass is always greener on the other side. And we might find out pretty quickly here that that's not the case. And my whole thing, when people are just calling for them to cut Gostkowski or move on from Gostkowski just for his on-field performance, was that who are you going to replace him with? It's not like Justin Tucker is available. It's not like these guys are just, for sale on the open market. Now, just in the interest of telling the whole story here, the two finalists, according to Adam Schefter, as we're recording this, are Mike Nugent, who's a veteran, been in the league since 2005, actually a former second-round pick, drafted in the second round, and then Kai Forbath, who's been around, kicked for Jacksonville last year. He's got a few years with the Chargers as well. So those are the two guys that are going to be in here, one of those two, and we're going to find out really quickly how lucky we were to have Gostkowski, I think.
Yeah, and the other thing that's, not apparent when you're just watching the games on TV, but is that chemistry between those three guys, the snapper, holder, and kicker, is very important because they have the same spots in the locker room. You know, they pretty much hang around with each other a lot.
Right.
And so that's something that, you know, a new person coming in, you know, they got to quickly get on the same page because it's such a timing thing, that whole process. It's a social as well as physical and every mental adjustment that they have to, you know, sort of jump into.
Yeah. And I don't think that it was like a well-oiled machine with Jake Bailey and Guskowski. Jake Bailey obviously being a rookie and being his first year on the team, he's the new holder now that Ryan Allen is gone. And I think that they were still kind of working it out amongst themselves. Now Jake Bailey's going to have to learn kind of how a new kicker likes the ball.
Yeah.
And like that whole element. Listen, like we talk about it, and I think that it's funny that in some respects that because the team is 4-0 and because they've won 6 Super Bowls and all these things, this we can talk about a kicker for 7 minutes on a podcast. You know, I don't know if like very many other teams that have bigger issues, they're bigger fish to fry, are really discussing the kicker at length like this. But I think that what one thing that we do learn from being in big games is that kicks and field goals, especially in extra points too, and so a couple of Super Bowls in, you know, the last couple of years, are so crucial to winning those close playoff games. You know, if you need that whole operation to be down like an absolute science, because that can be the difference between winning a Super Bowl or not in pretty easily. Like we've seen it so many times here that I think that's really a big part of it. And I'm not saying Guskowski was perfect in the playoffs because he certainly wasn't, but there was an element to trust there I think that still existed, even though he had the yips a little bit in the postseason, especially in the Super Bowl. But we also wanted to talk about Ben Watson, who was not on the practice field today. There were murmurs that he was dealing with a concussion in the preseason, so there might be some lingering effects from that. So that's something that's definitely worth monitoring. But the idea of Ben Watson coming back, Josh McDaniels did talk a little bit about it on Tuesday on his conference call. So the team is obviously expecting him to be back, if not this week, then very, very soon off that suspension. So I think that this is a little bit of a bigger deal than maybe we thought it was going to be at the beginning of the season, just because of how little production and how poorly Ryan Izzo has really played in the running game as well.
Yeah. I don't know really what to make of some of this, because with the Bills game, nothing was really working.
Yeah.
You know, like there were fits and starts here and there. I kind of felt like watching the Patriots offense that they're just being out schemed in a lot of ways, because it had the feeling of a team that has faced the Patriots a lot of times and kind of knew what matchups to highlight. A lot of the passing plays that you could see, they were there already. Or, you know, the player
was wild.
Yeah.
I've never seen, I didn't mean to cut you off, but like, I just really agree with what you're saying right now. Like, I have never seen, it's been a while since I've seen a defense. And I think that it kind of goes back. Remember when Belichick called out McDermott for not being a game plan coach last week? I wouldn't call out, but he said it. And it was like, he scoffed at the idea. McDermott game planned for this game. Like, he had his entire defense ready to not only play the Patriots at a high level and what they do and what their stuff is, but also that he had some really interesting game plan wrinkles that we can get like more into the details of in a little bit here.
Yeah. Because obviously Brady didn't have a great game, but he also got the sense from his body language. He's just like, they know what's coming.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of reminded me of the Broncos game in the AFC Championship a few years ago when Wade Phillips just sort of had everything going. I know the offensive line was terrible that game, but
Wade kind of has their number too.
Yeah, it felt like, you know, it just felt like a defense that had done its homework. And like every single time that the offense let the Bills defense down, they rose to the occasion. And that was as good of a, you know, because sometimes there's better players, right? and you sort of get out muscled and stuff like that. But this, I thought, was just from a schematic standpoint, them knowing exactly what was coming from the Patriots and knowing their assignments and making tackles, there was very few things that tricked them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that just to bring it back to Watson here a little bit, the reason why I brought up Izzo, and I do agree that nobody's putting the blame on the running game struggles on one player, right? But they have gone from arguably the best tight end at blocking, the best blocking tight end in NFL history, to the worst blocking tight end in the league, according to Pro Football Focus right now. That is a massive, massive drop-off. Izzo right now in run blocking grade, according to PFF, is 72nd out of 72 qualified tight ends, dead last. And I think that that's a big part of not the whole running scheme and all the issues with the running game, but in particular them trying to get the runs on the perimeter that they were really successful as last year. The stuff like the outside zone that they like to run or the wide zone scheme that they like to run where they're running off tackle, Izzo just can't turn anybody inside and he can't move anybody off the ball. So because he's not creating that seal and getting that alley for Sony Michel, there's no place to go. And Sony ends up just running into the back of his offensive lineman because there's no movement. So I think that that's a big part of it. I'm going to post something on Thursday about this. And I did like a side-by-side comparison of a similar scheme and what it looked like with Izzo blocking and then what it looked like last year with Gronk blocking. And it's night and day.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean to compare Izzo to Gronk. All I'm saying is that Izzo is not even giving them like replacement level production right now. He's hurting them. And I think that that's where Watson comes in, is that, no, is Ben Watson a dominant run blocker? No, he's not. He's not Rob Gronkowski either. But I think that Ben Watson can give them serviceable run blocking, which I think is really going to be very huge, on top of the fact that he can kind of give them a guy that can stretch the field a little bit from the inside the formation as well between the numbers. I think it's actually a bigger deal in the running game, though, than it is in the passing game, because I think they were going to get enough production out of their receivers in the passing game and with Brady and the running backs. I think that it's a bigger deal in the ground game that they're now going to have Watson back.
Yeah, I think they could use all the help they can in the running game.
Yeah.
I do feel, though, just him being a little bit of both and the experience and all that stuff, is good, from the fact that, you know, it gives him, when he comes on the field, it's not an obvious running down. It's not an obvious passing down.
Yeah.
And so I do think, though, you know, I don't know exactly how good of a blocker he is, but he's been in the league this long. And if a tight end has been in the league from when he started to now, and he's still playing and on the field, he's definitely somebody who isn't a minus blocker.
Right.
So they just have to get a little bit better. And I agree that I think, you know, he can provide that.
I think that they just need somebody even if he's stalemating guys and he's not winning the block necessarily, but he's not losing it either, that's still better than what they're getting. You know, right now, when they run it to Izzo's side of the formation, he's getting blown off the ball every single time.
Yeah.
You know, Jerry Hughes, who's not a big guy, he's obviously a very explosive player, but he's not big. He was just getting right underneath Izzo and pushing him backwards every single time. And it was tough to watch at times. And I think that Watson is really going to be an upgrade, even if he's not an all-world blocking tight end, just enough to be, you know, serviceable in that role. And something that Josh McDaniels quickly also mentioned too was, because of his experience, they can do so much more with him. You know, it's not because he has that experience and he has the knowledge, they can do so many more schemes and they can run so many more plays. Right now, the Patriots are leading the league in snaps on offense without a tight end. They've ran 70 plays this year so far through 4 weeks where they don't have a tight end on the field. And a lot of people talk about the predictability with Sony Michel. They're just as predictable when they go to 20 personnel, which is 3 wide receivers and 2 backs in that pony set. They don't run the ball a whole lot out of that set. They throw the ball a lot. And then they also have a 10 personnel package that they've been using a lot, which is four wide and one running back. Same thing. They're really not running the football a whole lot. So a lot of their packages and their personnel right now are pretty predictable. And when you play a team like Buffalo that was ready for it and had new and was familiar with their ways the Patriots go about things, that's what led to a lot of, I think, the struggles that they had on offense. And that's what we wanted to get to here next. I want to circle back to what you were saying about some of the things that the Buffalo defense did that were kind of game plan specific and ready for the Patriots scheme. One of the things that I wrote about on Tuesday that they did pretty well was that they came out in this game in the first quarter, every single passing play, if you look in the first quarter, they're in man coverage the entire time. And they're predominantly a zone team. They play a ton of zone under Sean McDermott, and they came out and they played a lot of man coverage in this game. And they also played a lot of single high post safety in this game too, when they're usually a two deep team. So they kind of threw, I wouldn't say that they reinvented the wheel or anything like that. These are all things that the Patriots have seen before, and everybody runs cover one, cover three, stuff like that, maybe a little bit of six. But overall, just the fact that they did that differently, I thought was a very good game plan wrinkle by them.
Yeah, I mean, it was a game plan. It was a game plan team on Sunday, right?
Yeah.
It does. So, and I think the worry then going forward, if you're a Patriots fan, is, okay, this is a blueprint that worked.
Yeah.
You know, like, which teams are going to be able to have the personnel to copy it and use it against them? Now, it depends. You know, like, I think obviously the Bills, we're talking a lot about their scheme. They have very good players too.
Yeah.
But, you know, a defensive coordinator is going to, you know, any defensive coordinator, even if they're not playing the Patriots, is going to see what they did and try to copy it. And you know, will they have the personnel to execute it as well? I don't know. And there is something to be said for, you know, Brian Daboll being on the staff at Buffalo. You know, that's a little extra help that helps in their regard. But yeah, I think it is something worth watching.
The other thing that they did that was really interesting with their linebackers is they had, and even some of their safeties too, Micah Hyde was jumping a lot of stuff underneath too. They had those guys dropping underneath those like intermediate and short routes all day long. And there was a couple of plays early on in the game that I thought were really interesting where they showed post safety coverage. So you got a single high safety in the middle of the field. And against that coverage, especially if Brady gets off coverage, the first place that he looks is for that little comeback on the sideline. Right, usually to Philip Dorsett. And he wants to throw that. It's a rhythm throw for him. It's an easy completion most of the time. And it can pick up the first down. You know, that play can go for 10 or 11 yards pretty easily, especially if Dorsett makes the first tackler miss. So what the Bills did is they still played off coverage with the post safety, but then they had the linebacker on that side of the field sneak underneath the route. And he dropped all the way to the sideline as like a boundary underneath player in a cover three instead of like a normal hook defender. And when they did that, Brady looked, there's one play early on I'm thinking about in particular where he ends up checking it down to Rex Burkhead. And he looks to that comeback route against post safety off coverage like he does every single time. And he looks and he sees a linebacker right in the passing lane. And he ends up deciding, all right, I'm gonna have to check this down, and he checks it down to Burkhead, and I think the play gained like 3 or 4 yards. And those little game plan wrinkles, and the Patriots only tried play action 5 times in this game, which I think is maybe something of more indicative of the offensive line, which we can talk about here in a second. But the other thing, that reason why I don't think they tried it all that often, is because they tried it a few times in the first half, and Edmonds and Matt Milano were just not even flinching on the run fake and just dropping underneath to cut those crossers off. Or they had the safety coming down and cutting the crosser or something like that. They really did. They game planned, they schemed, and they played a heck of a game defensively. Some of these plays, like Tremaine Edmonds is an absolute monster.
Oh, wow. He's coming into his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's learning.
He was all over the field. He was, and he's incredibly fast, and just his explosiveness and ability to change directions as quickly as he does is really impressive. Milano's a good player too. They obviously have a bunch of guys in the front seven, and then the secondary, that veteran secondary is in Levi Wallace too, is a second year player. He really held up well too in this game. And the Patriots had injuries too. I think that's worth mentioning. You know, Julian Edelman certainly was not 100%. Rex Burkhead wasn't 100%. But at the same time, that scheme and the way that they executed the game plan was pretty flawless. Tip the cap off to those guys. I wanted to talk about the pass protection. So an interesting stat that I had Louis Benjamin at PFF pull up for me was the Patriots' pressure percentage offensively when they run play action. So play action pass versus a traditional drop back. Brady hangs onto the ball, you know, about a second and a half longer on a play action pass. Excuse me, not that long. 0.15 of a second, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it is a lot in a football game, right? You know, that little millisecond of hesitation is a lot longer. The Patriots' pressure rate is over 35% on play action. It's under 30% on non-play. It's actually under 25%. I'm reading it now. Under 25%. So there's a 10% increase in pressure rate. So I think the biggest thing that I'm trying to get at here is that I think the offensive line struggles are not necessarily adding up in the box score, like when I do like the pressures allowed and stuff like that after a game, they only allowed pressure on 30% of the dropbacks against Buffalo, believe it or not. The problem is that internal clock. I think that Brady's internal clock and his trust in the guys in front of him. And this is like something that you have to like climb into his head. You know, it's not something that you can, it's not statistically, you can't count it, right? But when you climb into his head, I think that the fact that the offensive line is leaky at times, it forbids him from holding on to the football and waiting for stuff to develop downfield, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I think anytime he starts to get as frustrated as he did, obviously he sensed these adjustments that the Bills were making and, you know, having to sort of not be able to trust his stuff. I mean, there were a lot of throwaways where he just like, you know,
there were six of them.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. Like, I know that doesn't sound like a lot, but for one game, six throwaways is a ton.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of one of the reasons why he was better than Josh Allen is because aside from the pick in the end zone, is Josh Allen extends those plays and tries to make a throw and it's a turnover.
Yeah.
Whereas Brady was fine with just living to see another day. Although, you know, that pick in the end zone was bad. Really bad.
Yeah.
I don't think he saw him.
I think that he likes to claim that he saw him because he looks at the still frames afterwards and sees what happens. And then after the game, he could come to the podium and say, oh yeah, you know, he just jumped it. You know what I mean? But I don't think he saw him either.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know it going forward, which other teams are going to be able to do this. But it's there is to have a blueprint out there and to sort of have the film out there of, you know, what can work is a concern, I think.
Yeah, the other thing that really worked against the Patriots in this game for Buffalo in the pass rush is that they really ran a lot of stunts, especially in the interior with their tackles. And they just couldn't pass him off. And then they also ran, they blitzed Brady 10 times. And he did not perform well against the blitz at all. And they just, some of the scheme pressure, because when you really break it down and you look at like when they just rush four and it's just 4-on-5 and they just come right at you, man-to-man blocking, the Patriots have actually been pretty solid, even with Newhouse in there. But the issue comes when they get to scheming, right? And there's blitzes, and who's picking up what blitz and where, and how are they going to react to stunts and blitzes and other types of scheme pressure after the snap? Like, yeah, you can call out the mic, but then once guys start to come and other guys start to drop, the whole the equation changes, right? Right. And you have to react to that on the fly. And that takes chemistry, and that takes playing time together, repetition. And they just don't have that right now as a group. So they're kind of learning on the fly of how everybody's going to react and who's going to pick up what and all those kinds of things. So there's times where there was a stunt, for example, in the red zone where Ted Karras just didn't pick up a twister and Shaq Mason came off of it to pick up the other guy that was coming across. And he tried to pass off the guy to Ted Karras and there was just no pass off. And he just came right through the line and Brady just threw the ball into the ground. Right. Yeah. And then there was another time where there was a wide open receiver at the sticks on a third down play in the first half. And they brought an overload blitz off the left side. And Marshall Newhouse is waiting for somebody to come and pick up the inside rusher. And he's kind of like left in no man's land, right in between two guys. And he doesn't block either guy. And there's just the pocket just caves in. And Brady has to throw it in the stands. But the one thing that you did say about Josh Allen versus Brady, which I thought was really interesting, was that as bad as Brady played on Sunday, and you know whether it's me or my eye test or PFF or whatever, that we can all objectively say it wasn't one of his best games. As poorly as he played on Sunday, he managed the game pretty damn well. You know, and he didn't take those risks, right? Like he didn't try to push downfield when it wasn't there, and he let his defense win the game. Josh Allen and Matt Barkley didn't do that. You know, those guys threw four interceptions combined and some really bad ones at that, especially at, you know, the one Barkley one was, you know, he was under pressure, he got hit as he threw, but really all three of Allen's interceptions were not good, right? And when that the ability to just let your defense and let your special teams win you a game and just accept the fact that you're not going to be throwing for 350 yards that day, that takes a lot out of a quarterback, I think, because a lot of these other guys around the league are not willing to do that.
No, it's kind of a selfless approach.
Yeah.
When Brady does that, there's a level of frustration that sets in, but it's also an experienced guy who knows, okay, all right, we're not going to get these things here. Let's find just the little things that work. And he had, that one drive that led to a touchdown. And I feel like, you know, they were methodical. You know, they were very, they did their best to take what the defense gives them, and the defense wasn't giving them anything significant.
Right.
And like the play over Milano, the first one, that was just great coverage.
Right.
And a nicely thrown ball and catch. So it's one of those, it kind of reminded me a little bit of the Rams game where there's so little margin for error, but you don't make a mistake. And when the opportunity comes, you hit it, you know? So it was sort of like a, you know, the pick your spots kind of game.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we continue the offense here, we do have to talk about the weapons, right? Does Brady have enough weapons? This is now we got it 30 minutes into the show without talking about this, so I'm proud of us. But this is now kind of the topic around everywhere now is does Brady have enough? And I think it's interesting that I understand that the Dolphins and the Jets were not great opponents. I think the Steelers are a little bit better than their record regardless. I understand the first three opponents were not juggernauts, right? But we didn't talk about Brady needing more weapons in the first 3 weeks, but now we're talking about it now after a performance like that. I kind of come into this thinking, would it be great to have Stephon Diggs on this team? Of course it would be. Who would say no to that, right? But I don't think that they need it, if that makes sense.
I don't either.
I don't think they need more weapons, wanting more weapons is always one thing. We all want more in life, you know?
Well, the way I look at it is, I think Edelman obviously wasn't 100%.
Yeah.
He had a drop, right? Like, or two.
Was it one? He dropped a pass that probably was going to be a big gainer. He was coming across the field, and he had a step and a half on the guy in coverage on him. I think it was a linebacker. They actually got him matched up on a linebacker in a zone coverage, and he might have gone on for 25, 30 yards in that play after the catch.
Yeah, and the thing with Edelman is he plays so violently with the ball in his hands and by throwing his body around and stuff. Like, I mean, every football player is violent in a way, but – His reckless abandonment with his body, with a rib injury, you don't know how serious it is. You don't know how painful he was, how much pain he was in. You know, that stuff never gets out usually. But he didn't look himself, and I think that did affect his play. That's just my educated guess on that. And there were some just misfires with Dorsett, you know. I don't know if it was miscommunication or Brady trying to keep the ball away from the defender or Dorsett, you know, not being on his route. But it just didn't look well with them either. And I think when you sort of just put it together as an offense, it's really hard for all the good things in your offense to work when the other team is so on point with what they see coming. And so I don't think it's necessarily weapons. I think it's more of a holistic view of just the Bills being ready and having the players and the schemes to really shut down that offense.
Yeah. The other thing that they did when you brought up Dorsett that I thought was really great coaching, when they had Dorsett and Josh Gordon, either one of those guys lined up in the slot, they played a lot of actually two deep coverages and against some of those looks. And when they did that, they actually had the underneath linebacker carry the slot all the way to the safety when they passed that off, or even had him kind of bracket him inside there. So the Patriots in the first 3 weeks of the season have been hitting those big seam routes to Gordon and Dorsett down the field. That's what a lot of their explosive plays have come from. In this game, Brady didn't even attempt to pass beyond 10 yards between the numbers. Didn't even try to throw deep middle, which is usually his bread and butter. And they've really replaced Gronkowski's vertical seam threat with receivers, with Dorsett and Gordon. And the Bills just completely took those guys out of the play when he went that way. And Brady just had to check it down or just take the little hitches on the outside and take 3 or 4 yards at a time. And that was really another really good kind of schemed way that they went about it. And I think that the interesting thing about the weapons, like you said, is that it's more – I think they got plenty of talent and plenty of skill at those positions. It's more about the fact that they also need the scheme and they need Josh McDaniels to be scheming guys open at the same time. You know, and it can't be one or the other. It has to work in conjunction because they don't have, you know, they have good receivers, but they don't have an Antonio Brown. You know, they don't have a guy besides maybe Edelman who is just scheme, you know, he can transcend it, right? And just go ahead and make a play against good coverage just because he's that good at football or that good at catching passes. They need the scheme to be working, and they need Josh McDaniels to scheme guys open. And the guy that I come back to with this is not Dorsett or Edelman, it's actually Gordon. And McDaniels mentioned this too on Tuesday, that he could do a better job of getting the ball into Josh Gordon and giving Josh Gordon opportunities to make plays. And I actually really agree with him a lot on that. And I think that they need to find a way to make Josh Gordon more consistent, because they need Josh Gordon to be a playmaker in this offense.
Absolutely. You know,
going 3 for 7 and catching that 131 yarder to account for most of his yards, they can't have that with this team. They need more out of him.
Yeah. I mean, he's their big weapon. You know, he's the guy that...
He's their chunk play guy.
Yeah, he's their chunk play guy. He's their matchup, mismatch guy. You know, he's, you know, the biggest, fastest, strongest type, you know, guy that, you know, there's not many guys in the league who can single cover him. So that, you know, obviously opens things up for other guys. But, you know, if you have to, if you have to find ways to get Gordon the ball, you know, just simply get the ball in his hands with how good he has been after the catch this year, just that, just get him downhill somehow where he can run over defensive backs.
And they did do that on the mesh crosser, right? Like his one big play in this game, that is what they did. I just think that in a game like that, and I'm not saying that they should do this five times in a game like that even, but one time you got to scheme open a shot play to him downfield, right? Like you got to find a way to get him downfield against man coverage without safety help or whatever the case may be. And you got to find a way to get him a play down the field. And they just couldn't do that on Sunday. And I think that that's what they're going to have to do moving forward. And I'm not even talking about like just throwing a jump ball to him. Although I wouldn't rule that out either. You know, against the Jets, they had that 3rd and 22 and Brady just threw one up to him on the sideline, you know, and it was a throw that was safe that only he was going to catch. It wasn't going to get intercepted. And Gordon made a spectacular play on it. And this game, they never even tried it. You know, they never even gave him the opportunity to try to make a spectacular catch like that along the sideline. That's what I think once a game, and I'm not saying that there needs to be a mandate that he gets it once a game, but once a game, and especially in a game like that, he's such a freak that you just need to just give it to him and see if it happens, you know? And a difference in the game like that, that's a really a defensive battle between Gordon having one of those plays for 40 yards downfield where he picks up a huge third down conversion or whatever the case may be. Having that type of explosive play when you can't move the ball consistently is such a big part of what you can do, you know, and what it really helps the offense. We saw the 31-yard catch that he had that set up a field goal. That was a huge play in the game, you know, and it was just one play. That's all it takes.
Yeah, 100%. And I think, you know, he's talented, man. You know, it's
no doubt about that.
Get your best players the ball. You know, and I think it's easier said than done, because the other teams know that too.
Right.
But it's you know, he's a weapon. I think that with his versatility and his physical skills and the way he's gotten so much more involved and educated in this offense and more comfortable, I don't see him, you know, being somebody that's, you know, not productive over the course of the season. He'll get his.
Yeah, that's definitely true. He mentioned that today, and McDaniels mentioned it too, the fact that he is now running a lot more routes and running a lot of more routes from different alignments this year. Whereas last year, he was really only playing on the outside and he was playing the X receiver spot and that was it. Now they've been able to move him around the formation a lot. He's not running just like goes, slants, and posts all the time either. You know, there's a lot more nuance to it and a lot more that he's able to do. So I definitely think that there's more, there's another kind of level that I think that they can get to with Josh Gordon in this offense that they just haven't quite touched yet. We saw some glimpses of it, I think, against Pittsburgh, but I think that there is another step up. Before we move on, we got to hear from our friends at BetOnline.ag. The football season is back, and now you can get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, BetOnline.ag. Sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit and make your bets on your favorite professional or college team. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. I know what all those things mean now, you know, you got to get into the gambling crowd. Bet on all of this with the fastest updates and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, BetOnline.ag. Head on over to BetOnline.ag or use your mobile device to join today and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. get into the action today with betonline.ag, your online sports book experts. Two things that they mentioned. Can the Pats go undefeated? Oh, go ahead.
I got to say, I like the site a lot. I've been on there and stuff like that. It's really user-friendly. I mean, it's clear, it's clean, it's easy to use. I like it a lot. I think, you know, you peruse a lot of the other sites, you can get sort of lost with, you know, the layout and everything like that. BetOnline's pretty good. I like it.
All right. That's all we need then, you know. That's enough right there. So, yeah, go on over to betonline.ag and check it out. It's definitely a great site. And gambling, like I said, I know all the terms now. It's starting to really take over. But back to the Patriots, we wanted to mention one more thing about the offense, and we are going to discuss some things about the defense, I promise. But the last thing about the offense, I do think that they found a little bit of a semblance of a running game in this game against Buffalo. It wasn't always pretty, but in runs inside the tackles, you know, those inside runs, Sony Michel averaged over 5 yards a carry. And they started to actually get some of those runs that they really like the lead play with the fullback or counter or wham, all those types of things that we hear about all the time with the Patriots. They finally started to hit on some of those, I think, against Buffalo.
Yeah, I think it probably was a point of emphasis in practice, too. Because
gotta get it going. They got to.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the fullback played pretty well, too.
He really did.
Yeah, I don't think, Devlin's more of like a crusher out there, you know? Like
more of a batter.
Yeah, exactly. But this guy executed his blocks. I thought he had his body in the right placement where he needed to aim on his targets. Sometimes, you know, I felt like Sony was decisive and planted his foot and got downhill and, you know, and got to his spots and made his decisions quicker as far as where he wanted to be. And I thought, you know, the running game in that respect looked good.
Yeah, I think that that's a big part of for Sony moving forward. I think that last year, that offensive line and with Gronk too and Devlin, it was so good that he could just be patient and just kind of go at almost like a slow motion pace through the hole because no one was going to touch him, right? And now I think that those holes are closing a little bit faster with this group, and he's going to have to hit him a little bit harder. And he's going to just have to go. And when he sees a crease, even if it's not, you know, this massive crease, if any sort of crease, he's going to have to just take those yards this year because there's not going to be a bigger crease, right? You know, I don't know if eventually I hope that there's going to be some like tractor trailer size holes like there was last year. But even if there isn't, there are some holes there that they're starting to create, like in this game that he did take, that it was good to see. I thought Jakob played really well, honestly. For a guy that is super raw, like he's coming into this with really very little experience at the position. Technique-wise, I think the thing that really he could work on next is not constantly lowering his shoulder all the time and just going for the hit stick and actually engaging engaging defenders with his hands a little bit more and using his hands a little bit more to his advantage. I think he just kind of wants to clock guys sometimes. And sometimes all it is actually angles and body positioning, like you said, and it's not so much about blowing up a guy and making a highlight out of it. And that's not to take a shot at him. I think that that's just a lot of young fullbacks probably think that, you know, I'm just gonna hit this guy. And I think that there is some more nuance to it that Devlin kind of adds to the equation when he is out there. But they were very successful running the football with Jakob on the field. And those 18 to 20 snaps, he gave them 18 on Sunday. That's all they need from him, right? That's like 10 Sony carries. It's perfect. It could even be more Sony carries if they really wanted to go that route. I also thought that in this game, they finally got Shaq Mason and Marcus Cannon in that right side of the line really humming. And that was a problem I thought that they had in the first three games. And Cannon, I know, has been kind of in and out at times. But Shaq Mason and really Shaq Mason in particular, but Cannon also, they weren't dominating in the run blocking like they were last year. And out there on Sunday, I thought that they got back to that dominance a little bit. I posted a clip, one clip on Twitter of a lead play with Jakob leading through the hole, and you just see Cannon just toss his dude to the ground with a really great punch, and Mason just turns his guy right out of the hole, and the whole thing just opens up, you know, like the river, and Jakob Johnson just goes right through, hits the fullback, and Sony's off. Right, and those are the kinds of plays that you need from that right side. So I thought that they really got those guys going as well. The only thing that they didn't do well in the running game was run it to the perimeter still. They just can't hit those plays for whatever reason. Sony averaged under 2 yards a carry going out outside the tackles, off-tackle runs, stuff like outside zones or whatever the case may be. Maybe they just throw those plays away for now and they just focus on running it between the tackles. That's kind of the route that I would go. I know that McDaniels wants to have balance in the running game. He talked about that when I asked him about it, and he said that they want to be able to do both, because that it just like the passing game, you want to be able to go horizontal and vertical. You want to be able to go inside and outside in the running game to have that kind of diversity, but it just isn't working. And until maybe Watson's the answer, but until they get Wynn back with Watson at left tackle, I don't know if they have the athleticism up front to run those plays to the outside like they did last year.
I agree. I mean, that's usually the hallmark of a good Patriots line is athleticism.
Yeah.
You know, you see it in the screen game, you see it in the zone, you know, you see it when, you know, a guard pulls over to the other side, it moves quick, you know, and that's really something that people a lot of times think, oh, the big line, right?
Yeah.
You know, the big, you know, mauling line. If you can have an athletic line, you can do so much more with it. And that's what the Patriots usually have is a line that's athletic, a line that's in good condition, that in four quarters of football, you know, they're still able to like move and get to the second level and, you know, out condition teams.
Yeah.
That's not the type of line they have right now.
No,
it's
not a fast line. They don't move sideline to sideline very quickly as a unit right now.
Yeah, and that's very much a part of what the Patriots offense does well is when they have those faster linemen. Your screen game is not going to be as good when you have these linemen as opposed to you know guys that can really get out there. If you have a slower lineman, it's much harder to find a defensive back and block him or anything like that. So, that's definitely a concern.
Yeah, and not to pick on Newhouse and Karras and those guys, but Karras in particular, when you watch him play, when they hit those outside zone runs, they want Karras to do one or two things. It's usually either reach a B gap player, which is a tough block, right? You got to go all the way across to get like a three technique or something like that. The other thing that they want him to do is get up on the linebacker at the second level. They have like two kind of designs that they go with it. Sometimes they'll just have that center just go right vertical up the field and just cut down the play side linebacker. And when you can't get that block there and it just takes so long to get that guy turned out or to kick that guy out or to chop down the linebacker, whatever the case may be, the whole thing just slows down and it just gets bottled up and there's just no place to go. I think that's right now. And then when they run left, they have Newhouse, who's not the fastest of guys either. This is a big part I think too, of when they do eventually get Wynn back. Wynn's a super athletic left tackle. That's a guy that can really run. So maybe they'll be able to hit some of those plays later in the season when he comes back. Before we wrap up, we do want to go over to the defensive side of the ball because they played a hell of a game again. You know, they just keep on stacking these games together. And we spent 50 minutes on the offense and the kicker. But the defense is still balling out. The guy that I wanted to mention just directly, though, that I think that Devin McCourty has kind of lulled us into like an expectation of him playing really well every year. But right now he's might be playing arguably his best football, certainly his best football since like the earlier part of the decade when he was vying for all pro teams.
Right. Yeah. You always marvel at his range. His hands are good.
Yeah.
He's so fast, you know, And he's just the brain back there. I mean, they got a lot of smart guys back there. Don't get me wrong, but you know what? His communication skills, his ability to diagnose something if it's wrong, and come off of his guy and find where he's supposed to be, even if you know the play starts him elsewhere. I really like sort of everything about Devin. I've always thought he's a great safety. Maybe not great, very good. But, you know, the guy just brings so much to the table. And, you know, he's another one of these veterans that is not aging. You know, he's one of these guys that's just using his experience and his natural talent to just get better.
Yeah, I think right now he's the second highest rated safety in the league on PFF. And really, I think that the intelligence is really great too. The range is obviously excellent too. And I think the combination of those two things together is what is why he has so many interceptions to start the season. And the pick that he had on Sunday against Josh Allen and the Bills, it was just a spectacular safety play. Like, they're in a split coverage. They're in too deep. And Allen thinks that he's got John Brown on the post. Like, John Jones was the other safety. It was one of those packages. And John Brown's got inside positioning on John Jones, and he's actually kind of running by John Jones. And so you see the open field. You see the two safeties. Devin McCourty's, like, on the far hash, right? And he sees Allen staring down the post, and he just breaks on it. And by the time he gets there, he's, like, there in plenty of time. You know, it's like it wasn't even close. And it looked just like a horrible throw. But against that coverage, like, he read the field properly. It's just that I think that Devin McCourty and John Jones might have actually baited him into it a little bit. I think that they might have kind of set him up for it. And when they did that, it just – to watch him be able to kind of, like, hold his positioning long enough at that other hash to trick the quarterback into throwing the ball when he knows the entire time that the quarterback's going back to the post – that those are the types of things that you look at and you see, like, that Devin McCourty is playing this game at, like, a higher level than other people, you know? And I think that's really the most impressive thing about it. The other thing that really is impressive about this entire Patriots secondary, if you don't have coaches film on all 22, seriously, go watch just one game of pass coverage from the secondary and watch how smoothly they transition in and out of things and how quickly they pick up things, you know, just like they'll be able to defend a bunch set and run zero blitz against a bunch and then have the safety come down and, like, take the crossing tight end and everything just kind of, like, works together perfectly, right? And all the pieces just fit so, it, you know, automatically into place. And it's just amazing to watch how in unison and how together this entire unit is all the time. And that's why you don't have very many big plays, is because they're not busting any coverages. And everybody's accounted for. So even if you have a big play, like they gave up a couple of big passing plays against Buffalo down the field, but they were highly contested, right? Like, these are not easy, just wide open receivers. Yeah. These are like John Brown or Dawson Knox having to, like, box a guy out and win a jump ball.
Yeah, this is not Stephon Gilmore's first year here.
Yeah,
guys wanting wide open.
D2 really adds, I think, we're not quite on like peak Revis level with Gilmore yet, I don't think. But one thing that he does add that is really, really important is that because he can just go on an island and shut a guy down, or just limit a guy. Like, he didn't completely shut John Brown down, I wouldn't say, because he did give up a few catches to Brown, but he kept everything in front of him, and none of them went for, like, 80-yard touchdowns or anything like that, which is really hard against that guy. And I think the biggest thing that he does is that he allows them to put – if they're going to play post safety and they're going to play single high, he allows them to put that safety on the other side of the field. And they can, the safety can play, like, trips or whatever is going on the left side of the formation. They can put – Gilmore one-on-one against the guy, and they can have, like, five cover guys against three receivers on one side of the formation, and there's just no place to go with the ball. And even if he does give up a catch, he's so good at getting guys on the ground, like, right away when he does give up a catch. Like, he gave up a few to John Brown, he did, but John Brown didn't have any yards after the catch, right? Like he's not running away from Gilmore. He's not gaining 80 yards on one play. And just having Gilmore be able to lock down his side of the field and then allowing them to roll the coverage the other direction, that too just schematically is giving the Patriots all sorts of advantages. But I just really think that the in unison and how in sync this whole group is and how they just react like other teams are trying to run scheme to get guys open, and they're just so good at being able to just like beat that scheme. You know, like they have this play and it's like, all right, this is supposed to happen in this coverage, right? Like they run a post wheel and they're supposed to have an open guy here, but the Patriots react to it, see it coming, and there's no open guy. And and that's just really, really been quite impressive. And I really think it also allows them to unlock the front seven. And it allows them to go let Collins and KVN and Hightower and all those guys go get the quarterback, because they don't need to drop those guys into coverage. They don't need to play seven. You know, they don't need to play seven in coverage.
Yeah. I mean, that's the big one, you know, like it'll like, I mean, I think that's huge. And the two play off each other, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
When the defensive line, you know, is confusing the offensive line and you don't know who's coming and all that stuff. And then, you know, even the, like, there really isn't any play that or tendency that I've seen so far that works.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's going to have to be a team that's more talented.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to beat this defense with, you know, the same, you know, you're not going to beat this defense with, like with Josh Allen and Matt Barkley. Like I thought Barkley came in and actually kind of played pretty well for a little bit, but you never felt in that game that, you know, they're going to be dangerous. You feel like it sort of felt just that, you know, they were going to be under fire the whole time. And the Patriots are playing with so much confidence right now. To be this good is just really riding a wave, you know. Yeah. And I think it's going to help them down the line, obviously. You know, I'm just curious to see what that game is going to be, you know, when a team just starts putting points on them, you know, and how they respond to that. But
we'll see Patrick Mahomes in a few months.
Exactly.
We'll see what happens.
But you know, who knows? Maybe this is that defense that just never has that kind of game.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see.
I really do think, you know, and Dallas has a good offense. Philly's got good offense. Houston can be a good offense when they're clicking. Baltimore certainly has had a good offense so far to start the season, but I think that the Patriots can scheme Baltimore offensively.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing is that I don't know, other than Kansas City, if there's a team that has weapons that have a chance to be better on that day consistently than the Patriots corners and the Patriots secondary in particular. You know, I don't think any of these other teams that they're going to face necessarily have their receivers to just get open time and time again against these guys, unless they just have an off game, which is possible, obviously. But they would have to have multiple guys have an off game. You know, it's not like they're going to all have an off game at once, I don't think, at least. So it's really fun to watch just the ability to – you have Belichick scheming with this much talent, and this is kind of what you get. And this is the defense that they've been wanting to have for a long time. And right now they lead the league in both cover one frequency and cover zero frequency, actually. They played 22 snaps already this season without a deep safety. And they're just daring teams to be able to beat the man coverage down the field. And opposing quarterbacks are 3 for 10, and they have a passer rating of 2.03 against the cover zero. And it's just, you saw it on Sunday, like they brought the house against Josh Allen a few times and he's just like off the back foot, just like slinging it up, you know?
Oh my God. His mechanic.
No chance.
Just what? God, I forgot what it's like to watch Josh Allen for a full game and not during highlights sometimes, because his mechanics are just so bad. Like he's an NFL quarterback at this level and he's still so sloppy with his feet and yeah. just like throwing fadeaway jump shots. And, you know, it's just he like so, and so many easy throws for everybody else in the league that just way off.
Yeah.
You know, and then yeah,
especially early in that game, he was like dirting some throws that you got to have those, you know, like they're like little 5 yard, like, you know, running backs in the flat and stuff like that. And he's just throwing them in the ground.
Yeah. If you're a Bills fan, you just got to be like, what is ever going to happen with, with our quarterback play? It was bad.
If you're a Bills fan, can you believe that? Like, do you believe in Josh Allen? Like, do you think that he's the answer? Because Belichick just like crawled inside his head and just spit him out, you know, like he just wasn't even close.
Josh Allen's been what he's been, you know, like everybody knew he's got a cannon arm that it can't aim, you know, but he's got like, but then again, like he'll make that one throw that's like a total dart 70 yards down the field or something. Right. But like, you know, he sucks you in, and then, you know, you get pulled back out by like these very easy plays.
Easy ones, man.
Yeah.
Easy ones. Like you gotta have it. It's not like, it's not so much the field reading. All like a lot of quarterbacks like Josh Allen that have all that physical ability, they're not gonna be pocket passers, right? They're not gonna like read the field and go through a whole progression, and like if they do that's what makes them great. You know, that those are the great ones. But the ones that are just going to be kind of average to mediocre to bad in Josh Allen's case, they're not going to see the full field and go through a progression like they're Tom Brady. But if you got a little 5 yard out to a receiver, or the running back's releasing into the flat and he's got all sorts of space in the flat, like you can't throw those into the ground. Like you got to be able to give him a chance to make a play.
Yeah. He's got no aim, you know,
no aim from 5 yards or from 50. Like it's just, that's the other issue is that like, if you're not a great deep passer and your accuracy deep isn't great, like you can scheme around that. You can work around that pretty easily. But when you can't hit the 5 yard ones, then now we're really in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's who we saw on film at Wyoming.
We might have been wrong about Danny Dimes,
but I think
you're right about Josh Allen.
Honestly, what a great story. I'm not a Giants fan. Like again, I was so confused with the Daniel Jones stuff because like watching his film, like he seemed okay, but like his receivers weren't open, and so like he was throwing to his receivers who couldn't separate.
Right.
That's what I found was like the hardest thing to figure out about him. But like the fact that this is a guy that you or me or anybody were so down on, his fans boo him on what's supposed to be like the greatest night of his life to that point, you know, and I'm just so happy that the guy is succeeding. It's such a great story. And I'm glad, you know, that sometimes, you know, this guy who's, you know, he's a bust and everybody's on him, especially in New York, you know, with the back pages and all that stuff. Now that he's getting to enjoy some success in a way that, you know, you root for guys that, you know, you sort of come into the league as such, you know, villains to their own fans for no reason.
Yeah. And I have plenty of tweets that people can pull up of me ripping him pre-draft, after the draft, during the draft. Like I'm definitely not a Daniel Jones believer. I will admit that.
No, me neither.
And I was starting on the other side of it. Like I really didn't like him at all from a pre-draft analysis standpoint. I think the one thing that the Patriots are playing him next week, so this is kind of relevant. The one thing that that was really just been impressive was I didn't realize that he was going to have this kind of downfield accuracy. And the ability to like make off platform throws. Like he had one throw in his first start where he's like moving the other direction and he's throwing off his back foot and he hits like a dime, like 60 yards down the field. And I was like, where was that in college? You know, like I never saw that on his college tape. So the ability he has a lot more physical ability and arm strength than I ever imagined that he would have. And that is, I think, a big element of what makes especially young quarterbacks good right away are the guys that have that physical ability, because all of them are going to be behind mentally, right? Like, you know, all of them are going to have a long way to go when it comes to the mental side of the game. But in physically, if you can make throws like that, then you can survive in this league. And they've changed up the offense a little bit. They like are using his legs as a little bit of a threat and running some RPO and allowing him to scramble a little bit and also have some design quarterback runs with him. It's been impressive. And he's thrown a lot of interceptions. You know, it's not been perfect, but he's certainly given them hope, which is a lot more than they could have said before they, you know, he got in there. So yeah. That's our Daniel Jones minute. And we can wrap it up on that. Is there anything that you want to tease?
Actually, on Friday night, I'm going out to a Western Mass game at Minishogan West Side. And then on Saturday, Merrimack is in the FCS this year as a full-time member.
Oh.
And that's an interesting story because, you know, they've got some pretty good players on that team. They got a wide receiver named Marquise Spence, who is really doing well. And just, you know, and I think it's a growing program. Dan Curran, who was in the NFL for a while, played at UNH, is from Chelmsford, knows the landscape around here recruiting wise, and is finding some diamonds in the rough that would otherwise be, you know, Division I-A players. And you know, it's interesting to see how this guy who's really deeply embedded into the community here, knows the coaches, knows the evaluations that he's getting are trusted ones. And how they're able to compete, and they're competing pretty well. And so they're playing Bryant, and Bryant's got a lot of good Mass kids on that team too, so it should be a fun one.
That's cool. I didn't know that they were FCS now. They were moving up in the world a little bit. Were they, yeah. What were they before that?
They were, I think they were either Northeast 10, which they were, was their former conference, or like just an independent FCS, I forget, but they're in the, I forget what it's called, the Northeast Conference now. So yeah, it's interesting. I always find it interesting when a team moves up, you know.
Yeah, definitely. That's always I know Ithaca, my alma mater, has been trying to move up to D2 for years, and specifically in football, and just the amount of like scholarships that they can't offer any scholarships as a D3 school, and that really hurts them with recruiting, obviously. So they've been trying to get to up to D2 for a while now in order to start giving out some athletic scholarships and you know, make that program a little bit stronger. So it's always a big step when you move up to like FCS, you know, status, and the amount of money and the amount of scholarships, the expansion of that is obviously very big for the program. Overall, on clnsmedia.com right now, I have a film review up from Tuesday on the Patriots offense and some of the reasons why I'm not too concerned about them moving forward, as long as they execute a little bit better than they did on Sunday. I'm also doing a piece on just looking at some trends, statistical trends, with my friends from Pro Football Focus and Sports Info Solutions, just formations and personnel groupings and what they've been good at, what they've been bad at through the first month of the season. It's not a huge sample size, but four games is enough of a sample to kind of start to see the picture and where they're going with it. So that's the goal of that piece. And then on this weekend, we're going to D.C. Good time in Washington. We didn't talk at all about the Redskins, which was totally fine. And they are not a very good football team, but they do offer some things. Defensively, they have a pretty good pass rush. They have Terry McLaurin on offense, who we're both big fans of on this show. And I think that Jay Gruden's like an underrated offensive coach because of how badly they're playing. If Jay Gruden gets fired, he's going to be an offensive coordinator somewhere next year, probably with his brother, but it's going to be somewhere, you would think. He's got a decent scheme. He kind of like melds together West Coast and some of the old school West Coast principles with also adding some vertical elements to the scheme, which is really helpful for guys, especially when you have a burner like McLaurin. back when they had like Kirk Cousins and DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon, that offense was putting up a lot of numbers. That offense was pretty good. And Kirk Cousins, if you look back at some of those years, he's throwing for like 4,500 yards and stuff like that. So I don't think the scheme's the issue there in Washington. I just think that they're struggling with the players that they have right now to execute. But NDC, me, Trags, and Sierra Goodwell, the whole team besides Barth, we'll get them along on one of these trips in the future, are going to be there in DC for that game, 1 o'clock kick in Washington. And Adam and I will be back next week. Quick turnaround, Adam. We got Thursday Night Football next week. With the New York Giants and Danny Dimes that we just talked about. And we're going to talk about some Giants who defensively, they've obviously really struggled, but offensively, Danny Dimes has given them some life. So maybe, I don't know if it'll be a game on next Thursday night, but it'll at least be fun.
It'll be interesting. It's going to be fun because, like, hey, Giants Patriots is always something.
There's some blood, you know, some history there.
You know, I mean, like before the Patriots were a thing, that, you know, the Giants were the team around here.
Yeah.
In terms of fans.
Very true.
Like old school, and you know, the rivalry is so good with the Super Bowl history, you know, the Belichick aspect, you know, those press conferences always have some Lawrence Taylor talk and stuff like that.
Don't compare anybody to Lawrence Taylor with Bill Belichick. Lawrence Taylor is the best defensive player of all time in Belichick's eyes, which might not be false. You know, it's an argument for sure.
It's a very good point. And yeah. So,
but even let them compare Khalil Mack to Lawrence Taylor. Khalil Mack's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool. There's so much, I think, you know, not, like, I think there's good rivalries in the AFC East, but honestly, I think the best Patriots rivalry, if you're picking an Eastern team, is the Giants.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that always brings up a little every time they play, the 18-1 stuff comes out, and, you know, and the Eli debates and the helmet catch. And I think, you know, that makes for a fun week.
There's a lot of history there and interesting and intriguing history for us to talk about and to break down. And hopefully the Giants, you know, with Danny Dimes in there, they've been a little bit frisky, you know, they've gotten a little bit of a juice, of a boost. Whenever you bring in a talented young player like that, it really does help. So we'll break down the Giants next week. We'll talk about the Patriots against the Skins as well, and hopefully a better offensive performance for the Patriots against a pretty bad Washington defense. But until then, signing off. Until next time, for Adam Kirchin, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.